one of the attractions of coming to this school is the fact that we have a really good relational connection with staff that translates to the parents, the students. So it's a really tight community and we can really accomplish things rather quickly, which has presented its own challenges as we've done this. So math is obviously moving towards thinking classrooms.
Hey, Math Moment Makers. Today we speak with Michael Finley, the academic dean for math and science at a K-12 independent school. Michael's staff is questioning their work in building thinking classrooms and how it serves high-achieving students.
Listen in as we brainstorm strategies to uncover micro moves and macro plans to build a classroom culture that allows a thinking classroom to emerge. Hey, folks, this is another Math Mentoring Moment episode where we chat with a teacher just like you, who is working through some problems of practice, and together we brainstorm ways to overcome them.
All right, friends, let's do it. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of your math program will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or the educators that you serve. All right, my friends, we're going to dig in here. But before we do, if you want to hop on a call, a Math Mentoring Moment episode just like this one, make sure to head over to makemathmoments.com/mentor. And you can grab a spot in our calendar so that we can have a chat about your current pebble and we'll help to shake it out of your educator's shoe. All right, here we go.
Hey there, Michael. Thanks for joining us here on the Make Math Moments That Matter podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great and really excited to be here. Thanks.
Awesome. Awesome. We have been looking forward to this opportunity for quite some time. Originally, we had chatted a few months back, we had a couple things in the schedule that kind of got in the way. But before we dig into that, why don't you tell people a little bit more about yourself? Where are you coming to us from? What is your role in education? And just kind of paint the audience a little bit of a picture of where Michael Finley's coming to from right now.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm currently, and I'm in my first year as an academic dean over the math and science departments at a K-12 school in Southern California, in the Orange County area. So stepped into that this year, actually was announced last year after teaching here for 2 years. And I'm really excited to kind of be stepping into this new role, helping a team lead a change there. So
yeah, awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. How did you get into teaching? Just fill us in on some of the background there too. Were you a math teacher before you became the academic dean?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I actually started out in the corporate world. So majored in finance in college, went into analytics and consulting. Actually wasn't a real fan of math class through most of my school career, but ended up in a role where I used and relied on mathematics quite a bit. And it was actually through that process where I ended up getting more and more into education and going, hey, there's a real need here for when you see the output of students and when they're in a career setting, the how they're actually going to use the things that they've learned. I felt like, okay, that's a place I'm really fascinated with. And even more so, why I didn't think I might have even been capable in math coming out of school. And yet when it came to practice, oh, wow, like I can do this in the real world in a pretty demanding mathematics field, a field that relies on a lot of math. So
that's really interesting. And a connection that I've made over the years, I've found that a lot of creative people that I bumped into in life have kind of shied away from mathematics. And it's really interesting to me because you would think mathematics is so creative and it's so interesting, but yet it seems like the traditional school experience may have potentially pushed away some of those more creative I've found some people that are very artistic, for example. When you think about it, mathematics is all about patterns, and it's all about, like, there's so many, you know, art type, beautiful things going on there. Think of the golden ratio and so forth. And yet I feel like there's so many bright individuals out there that sort of didn't feel like it fit them. And then there's guys like me, and John identifies himself as probably very similar. Like, I just did what I was told. So I was what you would consider, I thought I wasn't very creative, but in reality, it was just that I was easy to mimic. You know, I was fine to follow. So that's a really interesting piece there. So I'm wondering then, for someone who used mathematics in the field, found it very useful, but didn't maybe see themselves as, let's say, driven to do mathematics in school, or not seeing maybe the value there when you were in school, what would be a math moment that comes to you whenever we say, hey, mathematics, or learning math, or math class, or you think about math? What's that moment that pops into your mind when you think about mathematics?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that and you pick up on it, because actually the thing that comes to mind is actually when a colleague in the business world in our firm gave me Paul Lockhart's Mathematician's Lament as wrestling with this. And one of his central theses there is that math is an art. Unfortunately, it is not typically taught that way in school. And that really resonated with me. And I think the thing was, I was always sort of a teacher at heart that was trying to sort of avoid that calling or run away from the profession, but it kept chasing me down.
Whether you like it or not, it's coming for you.
Yeah. So that there was a point in time about 15 years ago where it was seeing what was going on in the business world during the 08, 09 timeframe, working with financial models and other things, and having younger students who are now graduates, interns coming into our firm, and then getting that Mathematician's Lament. You're like, okay, I'm starting to draw some connections, and we really need to reconsider the way that we introduce these concepts to people. So I went back and got a master's degree in education, and have been in education ever since.
Great. Yeah. Great. I think the first time I was introduced to a Mathematician's Lament, I think it was from Sunil Singh. He was one of our first guests, actually. We'd known Sunil for a long time, and he had raved about that and talked about that. And he uses it, I think, in almost every single one of his presentations. It's a very influential piece. And I think it's great that you brought it up here too. So, Michael, what's on your mind lately? What can we dig into here today, the three of us? We usually say, what's a pebble that's rattling around in your shoe that we can shake out in the next little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the midst of not just a departmental initiative, but we are looking at from a school-wide perspective of really trying to take our education into deeper learning, which, as we will get through the Thinking Classrooms book and Peter Lildahl talks about, thinking is really the prerequisite for learning. So we have an art of learning statement that we've crafted here at our K-12 school, and we're trying to use that as our philosophical sort of North Star. And then how do each of these disciplines line up to support that? And the benefit of one of the attractions of coming to this school is the fact that we have a really good relational connection with staff that translates to the parents, the students. So it's a really tight community, and we can really accomplish things rather quickly, which has presented its own challenges as we've done this. So math is obviously moving towards thinking classrooms, where all of the things that you guys have been having guests on your podcast, which is how I found you, are the things that we are pursuing and the changes that we're trying to lead. But we found ourselves now, in some ways, we are actually, the process is going so quickly. How do we manage it? How do we communicate it to all our stakeholders has been the real big challenge.
That's really interesting to me, because I think when people in education, specifically in mathematics, at least the listeners of this podcast have some sort of hand in the mathematics space in their district or organization. And my thought is, I feel like everyone sort of looks at change as always being so slow, but yet you just mentioned there about things moving so fast. Can you dig into that a little more for us Is it that the process or that what we're hoping for is to see change happening quickly? And is that causing problems, or are we actually moving really fast and everything's going well? I think that's a bit of a loaded question. I think we know the answer to that, right? Is usually it doesn't always go really well the first time. So tell us more about that, that things are moving fast. What do you mean by that? And I guess what sort of pebbles are sort of revealing themselves to you as you push forward here?
Sure. I think if you could rewind 3 years across all of our subjects, what teachers and administrators were saying is that our school did educated students very well in the traditional forms of what most parents experienced themselves when they were in school and what you would expect to see in most schools nationwide, globally, et cetera. But what we were trying to move towards is that authentic student engagement with their learning. So we've actually, I mentioned that I was the dean of math and science. We also carved out humanities. So at this particular school, that's social studies, it is English, and it's also Bible. And so they're in a triad of humanities. And they are moving from where it was mostly lectures and tests to a lot of reading and discussion-based things, as well as
reading and
writing. And we have a separate dean there who is working with all of those department heads and the administration to lead that. And then, so we've got math and science, and I actually came in through business and entrepreneurship and data science. So those were the courses that I was and still am teaching. So what does it look like in math and science and in entrepreneurial innovation? It's a little bit different, but it's the same philosophy. So we're trying to have the students explore and discover and really take the lead. And we found a curriculum and we've developed a way of doing that by looking more in problem sets. And I think it even is what you guys would maybe describe as problem-based learning or the real flipped classroom. I've heard you guys use.
I like it. He's a listener, John. I like this. I like this. Keep going, though. I want you to keep digging here. I'm happy. I'm really getting a clear vision, or at least let me at least tell you what I think I'm hearing so far, and then you can continue elaborating. Is what I'm liking, it sounds like thinking, which I think you already mentioned, but I don't know if it resonated with me as much as it is now. Thinking is at the core of what you're trying to do across the curriculum. And it sounds like you've got a lot of the key stakeholders, key people, your dean of different department areas are on board for this, that, hey, we want that thinking to happen. This isn't just a math class thing, right? Hey, awesome. Peter's really shined a light in that area. But it seems like there's been this sort of spark that's sort of igniting other areas to kind of start looking at what they do or what they typically did in practice. And they're starting to go, well, wait a second. How do we actually turn this around a little bit? How do we put more of this on the students so that they're doing the thinking and the teachers become more of the facilitator? So that part sounds fantastic. So what I'm getting out of this is, like, it sounds like a lot of people are on board. So things are moving fast. Where do you see maybe some of the challenges arising here? So what problems are you experiencing? Where are those pebbles starting to show or emerge?
I think it's one of those deals where the more you dig into it, it's hard to live in a middle ground, especially when you have such a groundswell. Like, you get this alignment where everyone starts to realize that, oh, students weren't really thinking as much maybe 3 or 4 years ago. They were compliant and they were working in that conventional mode. They were turning in assignments. They were listening to lectures and they were taking notes, but that's different. It's not quite asking the same level of work that we are wanting them to pursue. It's that classic thing where your teacher is doing more of the work, crafting a great lesson to deliver it to you. And when everyone starts doing it and they put on those glasses, we'll see, oh, our students weren't really leaning in and thinking and digesting this. And that becomes contagious across all of the different departments and areas. So now you have a situation where students are kind of almost, they come back from their previous year of school, and it's kind of like, what's happening here? It's one thing for that one teacher that says, hey, I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I'm going to ask more of you. You're going to benefit from this, but here's how this looks. That starts to be in 3, 4, 5 of your classes. The students were really sort of taken aback. And it's taken a little while for them to kind of understand, one, that, oh, this is more than just one teacher in one class. How do I deal with that? And then I think this year, more than anything else, it's also been parents wondering about what this looks like. And the unique thing about math was we heard this, well, math is different. So parents and students could understand that if they were in a history class, that you were going to replace a lecture from a teacher with a reading. But how would anybody know how to perform a mathematics operation or tackle a certain kind of problem if it's not explained to them up front?
So what I'm hearing is it sounds like some folks that are stakeholders in your building or around your building are viewing what mathematics is different right now than what your philosophy, your North Star in your building. So where are you feeling that the problem is? Where's the challenge right now that you're experiencing? So you've got different philosophies happening, but where's that like, I need help exactly here. What can we help you with specifically?
Well, I think some of it is just like in your experience of having helped and consulted on change in different schools, different school settings, as well as with individual teachers. Are there experiences or situations that this brings to mind of like, hey, maybe you're going too fast, or maybe we're missing a key to sort of unlocking it? And that issue really is, there's talk about the fact that teachers, it's going to take time for teachers to adjust. I would say, you know, we talk about mathematics as an art. We obviously know teaching is an art too. Right now, our teachers are mostly struggling in the math department with how do we ask really good questions that are, Lil Hall in Thinking Classrooms talks about those questions that can sort of stop the students from thinking. How do you ask really good questions? And some of that is just being in the classroom and noticing and sort of honing your craft a little bit is my sense of that.
Got it. So we've got this philosophical kind of difference in it. And it sounds like when you kind of narrowed in on the teachers is that you're more concerned about helping the math department or the math teachers kind of wrap their minds around how they can put thinking at the forefront is. And if that's the case, what have you done so far? If you've realized that that's where your struggle is, trying to convince mindset, trying to think about how do I nudge my teachers to kind of think about mathematics in this way when they've always done it this way. What have you done so far to help nudge those teachers down that pathway?
Okay. So first things first is this. We sent everybody off for the summer break this past year with the Thinking Classrooms book. Everybody came back and had read it. And we sort of agreed that implementing those first three items, the vertical non-permanent surfaces, the randomized groupings, that those things would be useful and could be implemented in every single one of our math classrooms without a lot of disruption. And that, for the most part, happened. But it looks different in every single classroom, which might be okay. But in some of those instances, you will have students still asking for a lot of feedback. Is this right? Is that right? From the boards. And how do teachers respond to that?
Yeah. And these are definitely, so I'm getting a clearer picture too, which is great. So we always like to keep digging here. I'm wondering, how would you say, if you were to just kind of broadly envision, let's look at specifically math, but I'm sure we could do this activity across the curriculum. How well do you think it's going in terms of, there's one thing about the student, how they maybe feel, but how are they actually doing in terms of achievement? Are students feeling that they're not, is it just a mental block that they're used to just having these nice notes and there's copy this down, and if I just study the notes, then I know what'll be on the quiz because it's just going to be like the examples out of the notes and I just need to memorize that. Is it that, or are students feeling actually maybe a little lost in terms of where am I in terms of the structure? What are we doing? What is the intentionality, maybe the learning objective? And the reason I ask that is because sometimes when we shift away from that very structured math lesson, right? Very structured, like the title of the lesson is dividing fractions, right? And then all of a sudden you go to this other world and it's like, here's a problem. And then furthermore, my wonder is sort of like, or we always call it tying the bow at the end, the consolidation. When students leave a classroom, are they walking away going, that was an interesting problem? Or are they walking away going like, I think I understand the new concept, which is blank? What does that look like and sound like currently? Noting that there is no judgment here, because again, the whole school is very early in the journey, right? So how would you describe that currently?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, it's good that you mentioned consolidation, because that is one other area in addition to the questions that is a growth area, and our teachers are well aware of it. They're getting used to a new pacing. But yes, so we have moved from, you know, in some instances, actually giving notes to students. The teacher would create the notes and hand them to the students. They may, in some classrooms, have even been able to use those on tests, to trying to pull some of those things away, in addition to moving the order of what we're doing and putting the students in front. So one of the things is the students who were strong and were quote unquote good students in that former area are some of the students that are the most uncomfortable with the change.
Very common, for sure.
So I guess what we want to move to is we want to assign problems the night before class, and we want the students to attempt them. We want them to think about those problems 30 to 45 minutes and bring their work in notebooks into the class, where they will go up on the board in a variety of ways, individually, in small groups, sometimes the entire class. And our class size is average 14 to 16. So it's on the small side. And those will all, they'll go through all those problems. You'll look at different ways of solving them. But at the end, in the consolidation, we want them taking notes and coming away from each class feeling confident that they know how to tackle each problem. Does that make sense?
I think you're clear. You're clear on what you want. And what would you say? So is this something the administration has kind of said, this is what we want because we've done some learning. And then would you say that all the teachers know what you want, or some know what you want, or some classes do, but some don't? Like if we picked five random teachers and said, hey, what is the focus of math class moving forward? Would they all answer the same way?
Yeah, I think there's confusion. And on the teacher side, we've been talking about this and having groups and working through it for several years now. We're entering year two of doing this. But even before that, we spent a lot of time as a whole school talking about philosophy. But I think the way that when individual teachers look at adapting these things to their practice, I think we would probably have different, if we were to talk to five different math teachers from our team, you might hear three different things.
Now, if I'm thinking about problem solving and thinking about one of the things that we're doing on a regular basis, especially to implement Peter's work, I think Kyle and I have been talking to hundreds of school districts, you know, over the last year, 2 years, and what they've been doing in their classrooms and what they're doing in their programs. And I think one of the biggest challenges schools and classrooms have had with adopting Peter's work is thinking about what you articulated there about saying, look, we can take the three things that's super easy to implement. And I think that's where a lot of schools will adopt those three and they think we're doing thinking. We're doing the thinking classroom because we have our students up at the walls and they're working on problems. And then what we've come to realize and help the districts that we work with is there's a lot more nuance to crafting an experience for students to go through some productive struggle, to come out the other side knowing why they went through that productive struggle and exactly what was the purpose and then how that relates to the math I need to know by the end of class today. So like that consolidation piece. So thinking about how do I construct the beginning of class so that my students are engaging in a problem or a series of problems. Peter's work with, you talked about thin slicing is sometimes a nice technique that you can engage your class in a problem string that can bring out the big idea. But I think where the teachers and school leaders who've struggled with making that move towards the real thinking classroom is, and I'm going to say the intentionality of what the lesson is about. And thinking about, okay, here is what I want my students to learn at the end of class. How can I craft that experience so that they have a rewarding attachment to the learning that they've done? And then also know at the end of that experience what they're supposed to do next. And we want to make sure that we're not just say, hey, we're going to throw a bunch of questions at you. And then you have to then solve them at the board. And then we're going to, hey, what technique did you come up with? It's actually a lot more nuanced than that in terms of figuring out what model or what strategy do I want them to try or elicit or how to bring out? And then how do I bring that about? And then if I don't see what model or strategy is coming about, how can I interject and create that experience for them so that I can bring out the learning goal by the end of class today? So there's a lot more nuance, I think, to what's happened. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how that relates to what you guys are striving for in your classrooms.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think the one other element to add into this is we're using problem sets now that have threads that spiral. So we're shifting to more of an integrated math program. And we actually sent teachers this past summer, and I was able to attend as well, but we went to the Exeter Math Institute, which is run by a school in New Hampshire that's been doing it for 25 years. And that was really that was a piece where those teachers that attended with me could really see the complexity and kind of the artistry of the experience and do so from the perspective of the student. But not all of our team has been able to do that yet. So the problems and the way that they're built and attacking them in order, there is a logic to them, and there's multiple things going on through the problems at each time. And so that gives you a good foundation to spend the time to think about all the different things that are going on. They also tend to have, you talk about kind of low floor, high ceiling. They have logical places where almost every student can enter in, and then you can kind of extend and build off of them. All of these things are to say, though, that is, it is an adjustment for teachers to use them and adapt to the way that the students are engaging with the problems.
Now, I wonder, so you had mentioned a little earlier that thinking about this idea of even students kind of engaging with some of the problems more independently at home and then maybe coming out and then sharing some of that work. And that's an interesting sort of approach. I've never specifically attempted something like that, but I guess what I'm wondering is, what would you say? So we know as a school, we want more thinking, of course, right? So that's clear. That's very explicit. But when we think about, let's say, thinking classrooms and say vertical non-permanent surfaces and getting students to engage collaboratively, how would that happen? If you could wave that magic wand, we talk about the magic wand quite a bit, and everything was sort of just happening as it should. What would that look like and sound like in the classroom? And where is that hiccup? Because I heard you say something earlier. You talked about some of the students were kind of struggling, even a bit of the parents. But then you just mentioned this idea about trying to get some teachers to kind of get on board in terms of potentially using or utilizing those problem sets. Like, what are we hoping to see happening in the classroom that maybe isn't happening at the level that you'd like to see it, just so we can really hone in here on where that pebble currently lies?
I think when this is working well, we would like to see students walking into class, having engaged with five or six problems that are going to be the curricular focus of the day the night before, and whether they were able to work all of them out or could only get partial way through each of those five or six. They've attempted them, they've thought about them, and now they're going to put a problem up on the board. And it isn't for the benefit of the teacher to basically verify the work is right. It becomes more of, this was my thinking on the problem communicated by the student. This is where I'm stuck. And that sort of peer learning where a student that might have, here's an interesting way that I came up with this and solved it. And you get a situation where the students are communicating and working with one another, and the teacher is the expert in the room guiding and supporting that from more of a foundational, like they've created that environment that allows the students to direct it.
And what would you say is the number one barrier preventing that from happening right now?
Probably the idea that, well, if I don't have it figured out, I need to go and get a tutor ahead of time, or I need my parents to help me. Or if none of those things happened and I didn't figure it out, I just need to like stay quiet and not participate.
So what you're right now envisioning is the barrier is the student mindset or something to do with the teacher?
Student mindset right now with where we're at is probably is something that would make it, when you talked about really when this thing is going to fully flourish, it's when the students can click and get on board with it.
Do you think so? Are you seeing when you go in the classroom, let's say the students were presented with some problems and they thought about them, they come in, they're working on them. What's happening at that time right now that you maybe think makes that student go, man, I need a tutor. I can't do this on my own. What does that environment look like? Or what is that environment telling the student that they need that? Because if they're going away from the room saying, I need external help because I'm supposed to solve this on my own, what's happening in the room right now that makes that student say that? And then this is the follow-up. What can you change about the environment right now so they don't say that?
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
There isn't anything specific that's going on in those rooms that's doing that. This is where it may just be time. And it may be the fact that that culture needs to be reinforced a little bit more. That could be it. That's kind of a wonder on my part. But what you will see is if students don't take that ownership of really trying to assess, where am I in this? I mean, do I really understand it, or am I still leaning on? Can kind of replace leaning on the teacher to try to explain it to leaning on a peer.
Yeah, I think from my experience, when I've had students solving problems at the board and they're feeling deflated. And there's been cases where I noticed that and I didn't do anything about it. I think this was my early days of teaching with the same ideas that you're describing. And when that happens, the kid's going to come out of the room and they're going to feel like they're not supported. And when they feel like they're not supported, they're going to go home and they're going to talk to mom and dad. And mom and dad are like, well, maybe we need a tutor, or maybe we need to call the school. What's going on about what's happening in the room if they're leaving the room, not understanding what they were supposed to do? And this is because we're changing the dynamic of the room. We're changing the ones who have been struggling. They were successful because they were mimicking and following. And now we've asked them to do some thinking. And what it came down to is when I didn't do that, and when I addressed and tried to make sure that the students were, in a sense, rescued, that I'm here as your guide, and I'm here to make sure that we tie this up with a bow. It's okay that you didn't get it. It's more important that you tried, and that we are now going to take your efforts wherever they lie, low floor, high ceiling, but wherever they are in there, we're going to take your thinking, your attachment to the value right now around this problem, and we're going to bring you here so that you feel like your effort was rewarded, because we needed your thinking to get here. But we all have to get here before we can go on to the next day or what the next set of problems to work on is. And that's a teacher move. That's not a student mindset move. That's a teacher action that has to happen in the room to create that culture that says, we're here and we're going to bring everybody here. And I'm going to make sure that wherever you were, we're going to leave here going, this is where we were. This is what happened. These are the strategies you tried. These are the strategies I want to highlight today, because that's the learning goal here today. These are the models that we used to get at those, to allow us to use those strategies and achieve that particular learning goal. Here's the learning goal. Here's your next steps. But everybody has to get there. So if you've got students kind of in that sense going like, I'm feeling like I'm not supported in that world, they are going to say, I need extra help. They are going to go home and complain, and parents are going to call and go, what's happening in the school? It's the kid has to leave the room on a regular basis going like, I understand what we were supposed to do here today. I feel like this is my place. I feel like I'm supported along the journey, so that tomorrow or the tonight's problems that I get, I know that if I tempt them tonight, tomorrow I'm going to go in and I'm going to feel supported again. And then we've got a real culture of learning and a real culture of like, I can work at the boards. I can solve problems because I know that wherever I get to, I'm going to be brought to the right spot. And I know that my value is rewarded along that journey because the teacher used my ideas, my thinking to help support the big idea of the lesson of the day.
The image I just got in my head was this image, you know, when we talk about the hero's journey and the idea of the tension time graph, right? And in a math class, it's a great thing if we can allow that tension to rise during the productive struggle. And the problem is if that tension doesn't ever come back down, right? And that's where that consolidation comes in. When John, you're talking about that support, or you're talking about that, the tying it with a bow, this idea that if I leave today's classroom and let's say I'm not feeling super comfortable with what happened today, and then tonight, if the approach we're using is we're going to give you a few more problems for tomorrow, and I'm not clear on today, right? You can see probably like that compound effect. The snowball gets bigger and bigger, or the tension gets higher and higher. Now, that may or may not be the case here. We're just discussing a scenario of what could be potentially happening. But there is one thought maybe to just float out there, and maybe it's something to reflect on, and maybe some of your leaders in the building might want to reflect on it, is sometimes when we say thinking, right? It's kind of like the word rigor. It happens with the word rigor a lot. Sometimes we get it wrong on what we really mean by that. Because like a lot of people will say rigor, and what they equate that to is giving kids as many problems as possible. That's very rigorous, but that's not really rigor at all. And when we think about thinking is something we want to allow students to do. And you had already said it earlier, which is great to kind of reiterate it. But the real flipped classroom we talk about is this idea that we give them the opportunity to think first, but then we, the expert in the room, as you had already articulated, we're there to help kind of determine where are you. Let's take where you're at. Let's try to build off of where you are, and let's connect it to the new learning. But that's like, I got to do a lot of thinking for that. It's not the students that are going to necessarily do that. It's a beautiful thing when it does happen, when students are like, oh yeah, because of this, it's that. And because of this, it's that. But those are few and far between when that happens. And even when it does happen, we as the facilitator have to reiterate it, to say it again, to make sure that it's like, I heard what you just said, and what you just said sounds a lot like what I was going to say, but I'm going to articulate it again even more clearly. And I'm going to make sure I'm looking all these kids in the eyes so that I can see and I can read. John talked about the teacher moves. One of the teacher moves is assessing. When you look at them, if they're all looking through you, that's telling you something, right? If they're all looking at you with fear in their eyes, that's telling you something, right? If some kids are turning white, that's telling you something as well. And a thought I'm wondering about, and I don't know the impact, and this might be something, John, next time we talk to Peter, might be something that we chat about is, you know, I'm wondering what the impact, I think it would be amazing if in a perfect world, students had a problem set at home and they explored them. And I guess as long as the mindset and the understanding was clear that, listen, you don't have to get all of these right the night before, but it sounds like the intent there is that students are dipping their toes in, giving them a good go. But I just wonder in terms of the dynamic of how that changes things when we do the thinking classroom the next day. And I'm just going to throw one scenario that pops into my mind is like John goes home, he spends all night on these problems and he's in. And it's like, that's exactly what you want as a teacher, right? You're like, amazing, John, you're the best. I love you. And then I come in, I was the kid and this was me as a kid. I'd be like, nah, I don't know how to do it yet. I'll just wait till tomorrow. And I wouldn't look at him at all. And I'm wondering about the dynamic that that creates in the classroom when John comes in and he knows the answer to all the problems. And then I'm in a group and I'm the kid that doesn't even know the context of the problem because I didn't read any of them. And then we come together and then we're going to work in a thinking classroom collaborative random group. And I'm wondering about that dynamic as well. And sometimes kids have a hard time, whether they're old, young adults. Sometimes we forget that if somebody puts in three more hours of work than you, then of course they're probably going to know a few more things than you, but you don't think about that in the moment. You just think like John gets it and I don't, but in reality, like John's done a lot more work than me. So that's a wonder I have, and I don't know what the implication is there, but it's something that I think is worth at least digging into as a team to kind of go like, is this helpful? Is this helping or hurting? Or what sort of impact might that be having on the culture that you're trying to create in that thinking classroom?
And I think what Peter would say is that you're missing out on those epiphanies that are happening in the moment when students are seeing the problem for the first time together. And then what are those problem solving moves that some of us do that some of us don't do? And how can we, you know, those interactions aren't happening if we all see it at home in advance and come in with possible solutions. But problem solving is messier than that. Problem solving is us going like, well, I would think about it this way. And then you're voicing that. And then the other ones are hearing that at the same time. And those interactions spur on, you know, new learning for each other. There's a lot of value in those problems. Like I said before, there's a lot of nuance in how you craft those problems because let's say there's five problems, but those five problems, if they're just say plucked from say a problem set or from a textbook, I'm going to guess there's no flow from one problem to the other unless it's like, these are from part A, these are from part B, and these ones are from part C. They get harder as they go. Instead of a nice, very carefully crafted progression of problems that the solution of one helps identify how to solve the next in a way that it's slightly changed. There's maybe a strategy different, or there's another nuance to this strategy, but then all of a sudden it changes a little bit, but we still need to use this strategy here, but it's now a little bit different to the strategy. Thinking about a very well-crafted number talk or a math talk was the way we would say it. Peter would call that a thin slicing. Kathy Fosno would call that, Kyle, a problem string. So there's some very carefully crafted ways to make the thinking come out so that students are really making the connections that you want them to make. I think picking, say, five problems to work on and then at home, you might want to wait until the class shows up and very carefully crafted those, what that progression looks like.
Well, the good news is that the problems are well-crafted and thread. That's good. But I do think we've kind of landed on, I mean, I think what you guys both described is that growing pain right now. Your scenario about the students who are doing the homework versus the ones who aren't, that's a discrepancy that teachers are struggling with. And I think you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, we're trying to build a culture, but we have to meet the students where they're at. And I would say also, it isn't the consolidation piece and what happens after each problem is a big area of focus. So from a coaching standpoint, what I want to do is I do want to build that up. At the same time, from a leadership standpoint, I want to engender as much confidence in our teachers who are doing what we ask them to do as much as the students. So to come in and basically say, hey, we got to start, our consolidation has to get tighter and better and you need to spend more time. There's that sensitive balance there.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I think what I'm wondering from you is, I was about to ask you, so what do you think your next step might be? And I want to at least maybe even put it out there that potentially somewhere to start is not going in and saying, hey, we need to do this or we need to do that. It sounds like you already know that that's not a super slick move. It's not going to be very helpful. But my wonder is whether you engage groups of teachers, doesn't have to be all together, maybe in little grade level groups or however you meet, if you have PLC time, and maybe trying to get them to share some of these struggles themselves. So just like we tried to draw that out from you today was sort of like, okay, so we know there's tons of problems, right? We've got problems every day in schools and all over the place and in every subject area, but really trying to hone in on what's the one that kind of on my mind now. And we've sort of brought out a few of those. And I wonder if they would be similar if you engaged in a similar conversation with some of those teachers. And then I wonder if they would be open to having that discussion to kind of figure out, is there something we as a team might consider doing differently versus it being like Michael comes in and says, this is what you should do, right? And a lot of times what you can get is you can actually get a lot of teachers to kind of come out with a lot of the things that you were kind of thinking in your mind might be good moves anyway, might take a little longer. And that might go back right to your initial prompt where you had said things are moving so fast. And maybe this is one of those scenarios where it might have to slow down just a little bit so that you go, okay, we got to slow down so that we can go fast. So if we're dealing with these pebbles, what are they? You might know what they are clearly, but maybe they haven't named them yet. They've just sort of, it's really easy to name the challenge. The challenge is the kids are not enjoying it or the kids are feeling like they need tutors. Like, okay, well, okay. So why is that? We kind of rewind, we rewind. And if they're at the center of that, if those teachers are there at the center, I think you'll get some little epiphanies. It's just like a great, well-crafted math lesson, right? You're thinking ahead going like, well, I can see some of the challenges are these things. So what are the questions I ask in that role as a curriculum leader to sort of draw out some of those things and help people just say them out loud? And sometimes after they say them, and then you ask the next question and they say that and they start to go, oh, it sort of is right in front of their face. And it might actually just give you a next step. So I'm wondering, we'll flip it back to you here, Michael, before we sign off. And what would you say is maybe your next step? What are you thinking on? What are you grappling with right now that might be helpful as you try to continue on this journey, which of course is a challenging one, right? Trying to make change in any practice.
Absolutely. No, I agree 100% with what you just said. And I think that should be an area of focus. And I think sometimes too, there's that, oh, we have to fix this right away. And it's a process and getting them involved, maybe forming a group, kind of a working group of, hey, how could we make sure that students didn't leave our classroom feeling like they needed outside help, you know, in any sense? And that might be a lofty
goal. Or maybe just asking and saying, like, why do you suppose they're feeling that way? And even just asking it as a question too, right? So those are all great strategies. I love that.
Sounds like you've got some next steps there, Michael. So we're excited to check in with you. We'd love to kind of bring you back on and say next year and kind of see where things have landed and see where things morphed from where they are now. Would you be okay with that?
Oh, I'd love it. That'd be great. This awesome. Is extremely helpful and would like to have you guys along.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Michael, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, we can't wait to catch up with you in the podcast room at the school again sometime soon. For those who are watching on YouTube, looks pretty awesome. So good on you and great chatting with you, my friend.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Take care. All right, my friends, hopefully you enjoyed the conversation with Michael. I know we did. And actually, I'm sure many people can relate as you're listening to this episode. This idea of a thinking classroom is not one that's new anymore, or at least in many educators' minds.
especially those math moment makers who are listening to this podcast. We've had Peter on the show a number of times. We love his approach to thinking and getting students to do the heavy lifting in math class. But like anything that's new, any change that we make, there can be some uncertainty or a little bit of a lack of confidence as this process unfolds. And guess what? I've seen it happen where we have good intentions and we try to do great things in our classroom. But as we're learning to include this new approach, this new philosophy, sometimes we can miss the mark in a few places. So I'm hoping that you folks were thinking about your math classroom tree or maybe your math district classroom or your math district tree as we were having this conversation. And I'm sure there are many different areas that lit up for you. Obviously, talking about pedagogical moves starts to get us focusing in on the branches of the trees. But John, what were some other areas that you feel like we touched on through this conversation here with Michael?
When we talk about classroom culture and establishing that classroom culture so that we can effectively utilize those branches or pedagogical moves or teacher moves, they often go hand in hand. So that's the soil, the water, the sunlight. Like, what are we doing to set up that culture? And sometimes it's like one of those chicken or the egg situations. Like, do I start with pedagogical practices or do I have to focus on how do I create classroom culture? It's kind of like both are done at the exact same time. Those practices help create culture, but then it's also demeanor. It's also about policies that you're setting. It's like expectations. It's like how you're treating the students that are walking in and how do you identify those students as human beings. That helps create classroom culture, but also allows you to utilize those moves, building thinking classroom moves at a higher level and also with less pushback. Sometimes we experience a lot of pushback with new pedagogical strategy. You get less pushback when students know that you have their best interest at heart. And I think we touched on some of those ideas about setting up the culture, but also be doing the moves today. So that's hitting the soil, water, sunlight, as well as the branches in this tree. And again, we said this right at the beginning of the episode. If you also want to join us in a conversation just like Michael did here, we'd love to hear your problem of practice or your pebble in your shoe, or maybe it's a boulder. You know, oftentimes teachers tell us they're boulders. We would love to chat with you and we can record it and share it with the community because I know that your pebble is a pebble someone else is having. Just like Michael here, it's solving a pebble for you right now as well. So join us over at makemathmoments.com/mentor, makemathmoments.com/mentor. Fill out a quick form and we might be talking to you on the next episode.
Hey friends, as always, show notes, links to resources, and complete transcripts to read from the web or download and take with you can be found over on the makemathmoments.com website. And you can find them directly at makemathmoments.com/episode268. And hey, don't forget to complete that class report by filling out a quick little assessment to decide what parts of your math classroom tree you might want to hone in on over at makemathmoments.com/report. All right, my friends. Until next time, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you. If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training
an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle, walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.